Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show. What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with our co-host, Coach Nick. Coach Nick, welcome to the show.
Hi, Coach Steve. Thank you very much. How are you today?
I'm really well. The sun is shining in Melbourne. It's going to be a great day, and it's an exciting week in the challenge. It's our final week, Nick. Final week of this May challenge. How exciting.
I can't believe it already. Final week. Well done to everybody. Last week of this challenge. How amazing.
Yes. And look, like every time we say, yeah, 12 weeks just flies by, and you know, whether you're doing the challenge or not, like 12 weeks is going to pass. And man, like this new 6-week challenge, that's going to fly by even faster. It's going to be half the time, you know, in this 12-week period, we would have done 2 challenges already. So I'm excited for this brand new 6-week challenge that starts in less than a month.
Me too. I can't wait. Not long to go now at all.
No. And look, talking about the 6-week challenge, the registrations have opened for the 6-week challenge that kicks off on the 30th of August with prep weekend starting on the 27th of August. And I would like to say a big welcome to the couple of thousand of people that have signed up already in that first week. So look, Nick, we are setting up to be one of the biggest challenges that we've ever run with the Max and the Maxine challenge across the past, 10 years of running the challenge.
Oh, welcome everybody. So exciting. If you've got any friends that you want to get on board, get on board, because it's only 6 weeks and we've got so many good things happening, don't we?
Yes. It's going to be one of the biggest and best challenges that we've ever run. And look, talking about, you know, registrations opening, if you are wanting to join, you can head on over to the Max and the Maxine website. You can just click that little join button and you can join us. They'll be kicking off on the 27th of August for prep weekend. And look, not taking it away from this May challenge, you know, we are in that final week of this challenge. And you know, lots can happen in this final week, and probably the big one is taking our final photos, Nick.
Yeah, that's very exciting and something that you know, you get to take complete ownership over. And I was thinking about this today and I thought, even for people in lockdown, it might be a nice idea to have a bit of a pampering day where you put your tan on, you know, you I guess exfoliate, shave, probably in a different order to what I just said, but you know, just really enjoy that process and that self-care that comes with really getting glam for your photos.
Yeah, I always get so excited for like those photo shoot times, because it's kind of like a little snapshot, a little moment in history, moment in time where you get to remember it. So I am going to recommend everybody, even if you've you know, smashed out the past 12 weeks or not, even if you did fall off the wagon slightly in week 4, week 6, week 8, that's okay. I think it's a great time for all of us to reflect on our journey so far and get some photos done. And you know, to go through that completion process, all you need to do is to download a copy of the completion document. So you can find that on the challenge website, of course, and we've also posted it into our Facebook community group as well. So you can find it in a few different places. You probably find it in your emails as well. And you just need to take a front-facing photo, upload it to the website, and you can upload that as of this weekend. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So just make sure you're holding that document, or the phone that shows that, yeah, the completion document. That's what the judges need to see. So very important.
That's right. Then once our completion process is done, then we open up to our public voting, right? And our public voting is open to everybody, meaning the public. So you can vote, your friends can vote, your family can vote, and you can vote for both Max and Maxine challenges. Now, our public voting is quite different to our regular voting. So just because you didn't get in the top 50 in the public vote or the top 10, or maybe you didn't win the public vote, that's okay. That doesn't mean that you haven't not made it to the top 50, top 10, or won the challenge itself, because they're two quite different competitions. So firstly, make sure you go and judge for your favorite transformation. But then secondly, don't feel super disheartened if you know you weren't the winner of the public vote or you didn't get in the top 10, because you still may win the challenge, even if you didn't get the most votes in the public vote.
Definitely. Two separate things. So two separate chances to excel as well.
That's right. Yes. Then what we're planning to do is to have our challenge awards night, Nick.
Yes. That's when we get to get dressed up.
that's when we get a chance to dress up and look the part. And that will be kicking off on the 13th. So the 13th of August, we're inviting you to join us live on the our Facebook support group. And Coach Nick and I will be there live, and we'll be announcing our top 10 and our finalists and announcing the winners of our community award and the People's Choice Award and all the other prizes. So that's always a fun event. And it would actually be our third awards night. So we did an awards night for the January challenge, and then we did the awards night for the September challenge last year. So it's going to be the third time that we've run the awards night. And it's always an exciting time because we have a couple of hundred people watching us live. Everyone's anticipating who's going to be the winner, who's going to be the winner. And it's been really cool to see some actual reaction videos that some people have posted. So after the awards night, and they found out that maybe they were in the top 10 or maybe even won the challenge, you know, the videos would surface of a reaction video of them finding out, which is always beautiful to see.
Yeah, they're the best. I love it. I love it. So more of those, please. But I love the community. I love it how everybody's reacting as we're doing it. It's a really great live event. And you can do it from your lounge room. So you can sit there and, you know, have a drink with friends or whatever it is that you do to celebrate and just join in. It's really great.
Now, Nick, you know, well before my time, well before your time, the awards night used to actually be like a big event. So we used to have like a big facility and have a big song and dance, and it used to be a really big event. Yeah. And that, of course, with COVID times and the challenges of the challenge being national, you know, it was hard to have people fly from Perth to Melbourne and Queensland to Melbourne all in the same weekend to announce the top 10. And that's one reason why we've made it virtual. So it is a way for us to all connect, even though we are all across Australia. We have thousands of people doing the challenge all across Australia, and heck, even some people international. And the awards night can be a way for all of us to kind of be in the same spot in the same moment. And, you know, with these tough times right now, with everyone being a little bit apart, that is one way that we can kind of feel together in a community and, you know, celebrate what we've been able to achieve over the past 12 weeks and then soon over the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, definitely. And it just gives everyone the chance to join in. So it's actually really fantastic. It's one of the pluses of the new way that we kind of work in the virtual world. It gives everyone a chance. And if you want to sit there in your jammies, then that's fantastic as well. You know, you don't have to get dressed up.
No good. Now, Nick, we just had a pretty exciting weekend that just passed as well.
I know. I was glued to the Facebook group for every submission of everyone's deadlifts. There was some awesome lifting and some creative lifting due to people not having access to a lot of weights. I thought it was amazing. I think it's something that we're going to have to repeat.
Yeah, it was beautiful to see that so many people stepped forward to join us in the very first challenge liftoff, where they posted a video of themselves completing mostly a one rep max of a deadlift, and some people, of course, being challenged by how much weight they had at home, you know, being in lockdown in different parts of the country. So they posted maybe a few reps of their deadlift. So it was great to see. And it really is, you know, a celebration of what we were able to achieve.
I loved it. And everybody just got completely involved. And it was just a really positive experience. I really, really enjoyed that. I'm glad we initiated it.
It'll be good. And yeah, we're going to have to announce another one coming into the next 6 weeks of the challenge. So maybe the bench press or the squat will make an appearance in the challenge liftoff.
I think it's going to have to. I think we're going to have a tough discussion between the two of us about should it be bench or should it be squat. You know, that's going to be our biggest problem in the next couple of weeks deciding, because we need to do both, but which one are we going to do next? That's the biggest problem.
Or who knows, maybe the deadlift will make another appearance.
Do you reckon? Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm all for that. I'm really all for it. I know where I want to be with my deadlift, and I'm getting there. So
I'll tell you what, Nick, talking about a little bit of a live brainstorming moment, what we're going to have to do is we'll have everybody training for the squat, the bench, and the deadlift. Then as we get into maybe that week three, week four of the challenge, we'll pull one of them out of the hat at random.
Right.
Awesome. Yep. So you got to prepare for all three of them. Then we'll pull one out of the hat at random, and for that lift will become the challenge liftoff for that session.
That's it. Live and created right now. That is exactly our way of doing it, and I think that's perfect. And that also it doesn't let anybody be biased towards a particular movement or anything, because we have to train everything, don't we? So SBD.
SBD. It'll be good. Yeah. Well, look, Nick.
Well, I hope your deadlift gets pulled out of the hat again. You never know.
Back-to-back deadlifts. How good. Well, look, Nick, this episode of the Challenge Weekly Show is episode number 29. So we're in the final stages of our 20s, and we're soon to be the dirty 30s of our Challenge Weekly Show. So if you're finding the Challenge podcast for the very first time, be sure to check out our other 28 weekly Challenge Show episodes and all the other episodes of our Challenge podcast, where we've gone through and interviewed previous top 10 finalists and different experts in the field, where we talk about everything fitness, health, and the challenge. So lots of great resources. And, you know, listening to the podcast can be something that you do while you're maybe getting your steps up, maybe when you're doing your meal prep on a Sunday, or maybe just, you know, when you're doing some housework around the house, or maybe you are one to listen to it while you're at work or something. So it always is something that you can listen to in the background, and use lots of our gems and nuggets in our podcast, Nick. It's always good
to absolutely listen. And look, chances are, if you've ever had a question about anything, we've probably answered it in previous podcasts as well. There's a lot of info there, so worth checking out.
Absolutely. Well, look, Nick, let's move into our next segment of the Challenge Weekly Show, which is our non-scale victories.
Mm-hmm. So we love our non-scale victories.
For our non-scale victories, we are looking through the Facebook groups, our Instagram, and our forum posts and our journal posts on our challenge websites. And we're looking for victories that people have achieved that aren't really linked to the scales. So, Nick, I believe you found a couple this week.
I did. So we've got to start off with one of my favorite things. I always say all the things on the non-scale victories are my favorite things, but my real, real favorite things are any time that people get to do unassisted chin-ups, because I think that that's a very powerful move. And I think that it's something you can't hide from that in the gym. I think you can either do it or you can't. And once you can do it, it just makes you feel like a boss. So Courtney was able to do an unassisted chin-up, which is fantastic. And in her video, she had her coaches or people from her gym encouraging her, and they also wouldn't really let her cheat. So that was brilliant. Loved it. And now that she's done it, there's no turning back. So that to me is a huge NSV.
Congratulations. That's Courtney. Courtney who?
Courtney Reading.
Congratulations, Courtney. That's awesome.
Oh, Courtney. Yes. And so the next one I have is Brittany Towie. So I will just read out what she says. She said, a year and a half ago, I was 17 weeks pregnant and went in for abdominal surgery to get my appendix out. At 40 weeks exactly, I had an emergency C-section, which also damaged all my muscles. Between both surgeries, my core muscles felt like they were completely non-existent. I couldn't do any sort of sit-ups, crunches, or any form of push-ups to save my life. Today, I did 20 sit-ups and 20 crunches unassisted. It's taken me a long time, but I finally got there. I also went from wall push-ups to push-ups on my knees. Yay. So that's really exciting, Brittany, because also she's taken time. She's obviously listened to guidance of her health professionals to take it slow and get there the correct way. So I'm very, very happy for her. These two that I've just read out are so good, because it's about women feeling empowered in different facets of their lives in different ways. Like if you're a new mum, sometimes you just don't even know where to start, and your body feels like jelly and you feel like you've been sort of torn apart. So to get back to that is fantastic. So well done, Brittany.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. And now we've got Jackie Burnham. Now she did a 55 kilo deadlift. Now she's, as a bit of background, she has carpal tunnel, radial tunnel, and bilateral elbow issues. She couldn't even hold a toothbrush, let alone a bar. So she said, don't let anything stop you. And that's a great message as well. It's sort of like if you can sort of overcome those things that your limiting beliefs about what you can and can't do due to where your body's at, and really progress, you will come through it, rather than just saying, oh no, I'm injured and I can't possibly touch that. So with correct guidance, you can do anything.
That's awesome. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Jackie,
well done.
I've got a similar deadlift story. This one is from a longtime challenger, Nadia George, and she says that she's done her first proper deadlifts of 30 kilos in 12 months.
Good on you. That's really
awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that shows that, yeah, even if we do have a bit of time off, whatever happens in our lives, you know, we can always get ourselves back. So a celebration for Nadia and congratulations, of course, on the 30 kilos on a deadlift.
Yeah, very good. Very good point. Yeah, no matter what happens, you can get yourself back. Exactly.
Next one goes out to another really long-term challenger and actually one of our ambassadors. So this is Benjamin James. So Benjamin James, he posted a video of his deadlifting at home. So he's in New South Wales, caught up in the lockdowns, and he kind of MacGyvered his way into doing a 150 kilo deadlift at home. And if you haven't already, go check out Benjamin James on Instagram, where he posts this video and he's kind of like, taped on or latched on a whole bunch of weight plates, you know, from like the cable machines. He put a whole bunch of weight plates on there and he balanced some more weights on there so that he could deadlift at home. So, you know, I love his, you know, engineering there. And he did that all while he was homeschooling in lockdown and, you know, working from home. So that's really cool as well.
That's awesome. He's good at engineering everything, Ben, even with his meals and the way that he works his calories in and things. He's just a bit of a Tetris master with everything. So he just fits things in. He's fantastic. I love that. Love that. Nothing will stop him.
It was so good. Okay. And finally here, I have one from the journals on our challenge website. And this goes out to Sharon Horner. And she explains that she's been in lockdown for the last 5 weeks, no gym. The Tone and Shape, she's doing the Tone and Shape program at home with no machines, only dumbbells, suspension traps, and resistance bands. So it sounds like she has more equipment than I do, actually. And she says that her son made her a wooden step, and she's doing step-ups every possible way for the glutes, and she's using an esky as a bench seat. So yes. she's again, similar to Ben, she's MacGyvered her way into some equipment safely using that equipment so that she can continue training at home. So that's awesome.
Well done, Sharon. I used an esky for probably maybe the first 4 months of lockdown until I decided lockdown was going to last forever in Melbourne and I invested in a bench. But I was thinking, you know, Esky should sponsor us because I think everyone's using their Esky as a bench because they're quite good. They're quite broad and, you know, I mean, they're not brilliant, but they're quite good.
It is a job. Yeah. Hmm. See, for me, I prefer to just bench press on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do something like a floor press. And before I had a bench at home, I would like lay down some weight plates just to get me off the ground slightly so that I can get my elbows behind me while I was doing like a bench press on the floor. So I felt that was a little bit more stable. I feel like I'd break an esky if I laid down.
Yeah, you would so break the esky. Yeah, eskies are definitely not the most stable. And I've even done sort of trying to get up to the chin-up bar while stepping on the esky. There's been many things that have happened in my shape. But next time I use the esky for an actual picnic, it'll be interesting because I'll remember. It's also good to store your weights in as well because you can actually move it around, your dumbbells and things.
It's got wheels. Okay, yeah. Okay, so, get this. All right, here's some live brainstorming again, part two. Imagine if we were to create a little home gym situation. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of like an esky, but we won't call it an esky. We'll call it like the Nesky or something like that.
Nesky's right? Cute. Yeah.
And then inside of that, we'll have all, you can store all your weights, mm-hmm. right? And then you can just wheel it out to maybe your backyard or your garage or something. And then when you're ready to train, you open up the lid and you take out your, you know, small little dumbbell handle. You've got your little weights plates there, maybe some resistance bands. And you put the lid back on and maybe you like strap the lid on. And you've got your little bench, you got your weights, and it's all a little nice stored bit of equipment. What do you think?
That's perfect. Why hasn't someone invented the Nesky?
The Nesky. Yeah. I used to get that nickname a lot when I was in high school.
Oh,
my last name being Escaf. So everyone used to call me Esky or Eskimo or Nescafe. Yeah.
Really, you need to actually invent this thing because it's already got your name on it. It's pretty much done.
Yeah. But you'll call it like the next ski because it's like the next thing, the next ski.
Yes. Yeah. Well, if anyone's listening that would like to invent that with Coach Steve, please and just fill one up for us and we'll use it ourselves in the office. We'd like that.
Yes. Well, look, Nick, let's move on to our next segment called the Coach's Corner. So the Coach's Corner is where Nick and I will offer you our tips for the week. We'll talk about, you know, an interesting topic. So Nick, take it away.
All right. So I'm just going to talk about something that I've had a few emails about. So I just thought if anyone's listening that's keen, obviously we've got a few triathletes that do this program here and there, and they haven't really had a chance to shine in their own discipline yet because, I mean, obviously they're doing it in the background, but now we've got a dedicated sprint triathlon program. So I'm a little bit excited about that. And, yeah, a few people have just asked a little bit about the structure of the program and how much volume's in there, how to prepare for it, you know, what days are they going to need to train, that sort of thing. So I just thought I'd quickly go through that and just explain what we've done. So with triathletes, I know we talk a lot about recovery and things like that, and it's very, very, very important. But with triathletes, there is also a lot of volume that needs to be achieved within the week. So it's almost like sometimes you even might have to do two sessions in one day just to get it done. Now, you can really choose when you want to do those sessions, but we've got, I like to start with Monday as a swimming day because swimming can be quite taxing on the entire body. And also it's just good to get that day done, I reckon. So we've got a swimming day on the Monday. And then, so we like to do, it basically goes swim, bike, run. So we like to do biking and making sure also that you are never really pushing. You're going to do a reasonable amount of volume, but you're not going to do it to 100% ever until you're basically in the race. So, just make sure that you don't go to the point where you're under recovered. That's, I think, the best way to manage a lot of volume is to make sure that you are not going like, you know, your one rep max on the bike, as in like power sprints and taxing yourself and gassing out. And then, we do actually have a rest day, which I recommend that you take completely as a rest day. So I'd prefer personally, I don't know how you feel, Coach Steve, but I prefer to train two things in one day and have a full rest day than having to do every single day. So that's just how I feel about it. I'd like to have one day off. And then we also have our brick session. So that is incredibly important for anyone who's either a seasoned triathlete or somebody who is doing it for the first time. You need to be able to feel your legs and what they feel like after going on the bike to the run, particularly, even though once you're swimming in the ocean and then you stand up and you have to run, that feels weird too. But that one's sort of something that your body can adapt to fairly quickly. But the bike to the run is something that gets people. So we have that every single week. You've got a brick session. If you feel that you want to add another brick session in, there's every opportunity to do that as well. So feel free to tweak the program a little bit as long as you get all the volume done that's on there. So that would be my tip. Yeah. So, I mean, also the thing is I want people to interact with the program and, as we do with all of our programs, make it your own. So don't be afraid if you have a gym that has a pool available and you want to split your session and you want to do your cross training and then you want to go for a swim, that's also okay, because really, to be honest, the more that you can fit in to the one session, the better your endurance is going to get. So we do split it up for time reasons and also just for recovery reasons, but you do want to be able to handle even slightly more volume than what the actual event is. You want to kind of overreach a little bit, because then you'll find that it's much better than rocking up and doing it all raw. You know, I feel like with a run, you could get away with it a little bit more than what you can with the triathlon, because you can really gas out in the swim. Also, very important, I must just say, and what I want to talk about is please practice in the open water at some point. Obviously, if you're locked down and how long it's going to go for and you don't have many options, then obviously that might not work for you. But if you live near a beach or anything like that and it's safe, I would practice in the open water, because it's very, very different to the pool. So it's important to get out there and, find a squad or find someone or find even like one of those closed up pools. I know in Melbourne, we have one in Brighton where you can even just get out there, feel the water, feel how your body reacts to the water, notice how you breathe when you're in that water, because also it's going to be cold. So that can cause people to panic sometimes as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's good advice. I've never done a triathlon. I've never needed to train for like a multidisciplinary events like a swim, bike, run. And it just has its challenges. Yeah,
it's almost a different breed. And I think any triathlete that's listening to this or anyone who's experienced training for triathlons will understand that it's almost like the people that are attracted to it, they will do, say, an 8-hour, you know, if it's for a big Ironman or something, an 8-hour bike ride, and then they might do a swim that later on in that day. So there's the limit does not exist. And I would love to, as you do with your Technique Tuesday, I would love to encourage people to slow it down a bit, because I think sometimes recovery can actually benefit you more than doing too much. But I do also want people to absolutely make sure that they are practicing each discipline and don't get complacent in one. So if you're a decent swimmer and you're quite fast, that's great. You just make sure that you get that volume in, but also don't sort of rest on the laurels of the swim and think that that's going to get you through. Because you know what happens? If you're a great swimmer, you get out there first, you win your swim, but then every single person on the bike will take over, you know, and you don't want to be that person. You don't want to be the one that's the good swimmer and then you get to the run and you're gassed out. So really also watch your nutrition. You know, that's the thing, like make sure that you're, because this stuff makes you hungry. That's the other thing that I want to say. You get so hungry that you can actually end up eating more calories than what you need. So then your race weight won't be ideal. And so on that run, you'll suffer. So, and that sounds like, oh, you watch out. But I just want to say that, the sort of the lighter and leaner you can be when you're doing this, the better experience you're going to have as well, because you don't want to carry around too much excess. So just a few tips, but I'll be here all the time to give more and more tips because I do like it.
I like it. No, that's good. That's good. That's really good advice. You know, just touching on like volume, and for some of you who may not be interested in triathlon and wondering, well, how does it work? Like if you're going to be doing just so much volume of work, aren't you going to lead to fatigue and overtraining and, you know, these concepts that we talk about all the time? And I think the difference that we do need to appreciate between, let's say, doing a triathlon and doing maybe a weightlifting event is that within that triathlon training program, within that endurance training program, you know, we're not training at peak levels all the time. We're not training at our, you know, 80, 90, 95% max all the time. You know, with that triathlon work, you know, you might be cruising at that like 50 to 60% effort. You know, it's not a sprint when you're on the bike. It's not a sprint while you're running or swimming. You know, it's about that pace and that endurance. And it does become a little bit of a mental battle because, you know, I genuinely believe that every person right now, everyone listening to this, you, me included, everyone around me, we can all do like a marathon right now with no training. I think it's like that big mental aspect of, okay, it might take you 8 hours, but you're going to go that 42.2 kilometers of the marathon. You're going to get it done because it's that mental aspect of that endurance event.
I agree. It's finding those mental demons that you may not have to find in the gym because, you know, I mean, you can find it for 2 minutes to gas yourself out doing like a max deadlift and the reward's immediate. Whereas this one here, the reward might not come until you finish the event. It might be cold outside doing your bike. It might be yucky for running. You might have a few niggles. It's really like a transformation of your mind, if any, you know, and also the fears within the event always change. I've gone through being an ace swimmer, loving it, to being absolutely fearful for an entire season of the water for some reason. I got fearful of it. My heart was racing. I got scared. I got scared of the bike at one point. I wasn't ever scared of the run. I just didn't love it. But so it's all these weird mental things and you think you've conquered it and then you haven't. And also just that need to continue on and on, which can then, if you're like that in the gym, you actually never get anywhere because you'll never really push to your max. You want to feel like you've had enough in the gym, but with the triathlon, you kind of never want to feel like you've had enough. You want to just go to that point where you can keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, for anybody who's never done an endurance event, let's say my own anecdotes, like going from only really being a weightlifter, loving the gym life, the gym culture, to training for a marathon, it's just a completely different reward system. Like that concept of like the runner's high is so true. It's so real. Like where for me, like to go out for a run, there was a point where I was like, oh, I'm not going to run if it's anything less than 15 kilometers because I wanted that like runner's high type idea. And for many people who've never gone running, they're probably scoffing right now going, Steve, me running 15 kilometers, yeah, right, piss off.
Hardly know.
Then I think at the time, like I had such like a bliss experience, like a euphoric experience, like going that distance. It was so rewarding. And then when I went home, I didn't feel like tired. I was like, yeah, that was great. This was awesome. That was fun. And I was just like everyone else listening right now, scoffing at me being like, oh, yeah, no way. And it took me a while to kind of like build up that fitness. And then I got to a point where it's like, yeah, no matter the distance, like I could go because I knew how to pace myself and keep on going. So different beast altogether in training for an endurance event, such as like a sprint try or a half marathon, or even just a 5K, different approach to training. And I think it's great that we can challenge ourselves in different avenues of fitness.
Correct. And yeah, and you've summed that up nicely, because also my point is if anyone has a glance at it and goes, whoa, that's a lot, that's the reason why. Like that's the reason why it seems like there's a lot of stuff to do there, because there really is a lot of stuff needed to put everything together in the way that you would want to complete that race. And you don't want to have a DNF, which means did not finish.
DNF. No, you don't want that one.
No.
Well, look, Nick, I actually just wanted to change the idea, and I want to talk a little bit about weightlifting belts.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gone from sprint triathlons and endurance events to kind of like the weightlifting, powerlifting scene. And I want to talk about weightlifting belts.
Yes.
And, you know, we always get questions about weightlifting belts or about, you know, weightlifting equipment in general from like, you know, gloves and straps and chalk and things. But I just wanted to touch on the idea of a weightlifting belt.
Yes, please go for it.
Now, the first thing that we need to appreciate with a weightlifting belt is that it's a tool. It's a tool, and just by having a belt doesn't guarantee certain things. So just by using a belt doesn't guarantee that you're going to be stronger. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to be safer. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to have the perfect technique or whatever else you're thinking the belt is going to do. Sure, you know, you could argue a bit of a placebo. Oh, I'm wearing a belt. I feel strong and awesome. Great, happy days. But you know, the weightlifting belt is a tool, and if used incorrectly, it's not going to achieve anything.
No.
Does everyone need a weightlifting belt? No, not everybody needs a weightlifting belt. And there's this old kind of saying in weightlifting communities, and often the coach would say it, something like, you know, you need to earn the right to wear a belt. Okay. And what they're inferring to is that you do need to have relatively efficient technique, keyword efficient technique. So it doesn't need to be the most perfect technique going around or the most quote, quote, safest technique. You know, you need to have a relative competency of a technique such as a squat or a deadlift or a bench press or whatever technique you're doing. And you kind of need to earn the right to use that belt. Now, for most of us, you know, if you're lifting, let's say 50% of your body weight. So let's say me, I'm 100 kilos. If I'm lifting 50 kilos on a deadlift, I don't really need a weightlifting belt for anything like that. I would be perfectly fine in picking up the weight and going on my way. For most of us, if we are playing around with the idea of, you know, 1x body weight, even closer to 2x body weight, that's when we can kind of start toying with the idea of, okay, maybe it's time that we start utilizing a tool like a weightlifting belt. Okay. Now, there's lots of different types of belts out there, different thicknesses, different levers and prongs, and, you know, thick in the back, thin in the front. There's some that are leather. There's some that are like really firm texture and tissue. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what type of belts we have. It really comes down to a preference of what belts we go to purchase, because the belt, as I said, is a tool, and it ultimately comes down to the idea of what we're trying to achieve with the belt. Okay. So when we put the belt on, we want the belt to be relatively tight. So it's a little bit uncomfortable. It's not something that we put on when we walk into a gym and walk around and do all our workout and go, oh, hey, Bob, I got my belt on. I'm all set. No, it's supposed to be something that we kind of put on, tighten up, we do our set, and then we kind of want to take it off because it's quite tight and firm on us. So if you're one to have a belt right now and you walk into the gym, you put your belt on and then you don't take it off until you walk out. Okay. Maybe you're not using the belt as it's intended to be. It should be something that you put on nice and tight, do your lift, and then take it off.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen people walking around the gym with it on all the time. I don't quite understand it, but
I see people wearing it like down, like around their waist, kind of like as almost like a fashion statement. It's like, okay, cool, fine. But anyway, that's not about those people. We're talking about using the weightlifting belt as a tool. Now, When we're using the belt, the aim of the belt is to increase intra-abdominal pressure. So intra meaning internal and abdominal meaning our abs and pressure meaning pressure. So we're trying to create pressure from our midsection so that we can increase the stability of our core or our midsection, okay? And ultimately, that intra-abdominal pressure is kind of like, I'm going to make this sound. You know when you go, huh, right? You know that sound? Huh, and if you do this right now, huh, that's making intra-abdominal pressure. Huh. So what we're trying to do with that belt nice and tight, is we're kind of getting this external feedback so that when we go, huh, we can kind of push against something, right? When we breathe in and we go, huh, we can push against that belt and we can create pressure so that we can create power, okay? Now, actually, fun fact, in the clinic, so in a physio, osteo, chiro doctor's clinic, they will utilize something like that, huh, which we call the Valsalva maneuver, to test for a disc bulge. So if you'd like a free physical therapy consult right now, if you've got a bit of back pain, just go, huh, and if you are experiencing pain from that, and that's the same pain as you're normally experiencing, that kind of ticks the box of, okay, maybe you've got a disc bulge. So in the inverse, if you go, huh, and you don't have any back pain, well, chances are you don't have a disc bulge, okay?
Because,
yeah. So if you are worried if you have a disc bulge, just go, huh. And Nick, we have a few hundred people listen to our podcast here. And I'm just visualizing them walking outside going, huh, or maybe in the kitchen going, huh.
Anyway. Definitely. Oh my gosh, but that's so exciting because that's a good way to be able to tell.
Be able to tell if you've got a disc bulge. Anyway, so that's a really old kind of test, not used very often, and it's kind of got a weak sensitivity, but it's one of our tests that we use. Anyway, so the point of this whole thing, using a weightlifting belt, first, we've got to earn the right to use a weightlifting belt. You need to have a certain level of competency with your movement and a relatively efficient technique. By wearing a belt, it doesn't guarantee that you're somewhat safer. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to be stronger, or it doesn't guarantee that your technique is going to magically improve. Being a tool, it's something that you need to practice to use. Okay. So just like, let's say, tools that you're going to build a house. Yeah, you can give anyone a hammer, but they still need to learn how to use that hammer and use it effectively. Same as a weightlifting belt. You do need to learn how to put it on, how to brace into the belt and then lift with a belt. So like for myself, I've recently been wearing a weightlifting belt when I bench press. Okay. So a strange one to think about, wearing a weightlifting belt when you bench press. But what I'm trying to do is to create more pressure through my midsection so that I've got a nice stable surface to create power from. So it's just like, like a cannon, the big cannon. If you put a cannon on like a boat or like a small little dinghy boat on the water, if you shoot that cannon, the cannon's not going to go very far because it's, on an unstable surface. But if you put that cannon on the ground, a nice stable surface, and, the cannon's going to fly. That's a similar concept of what we're trying to do. We're trying to increase our ability to create stability in our midsection so that we are able to create more force through our periphery or our legs and our arms. So I've been trying to use a weightlifting belt when I bench press, and it's taken me a really long time to figure out how to use it. So it's a tool that you do need to practice so that you can utilize it to its best effect. Now, when applying that weightlifting belt, there will be different preferences and different people will lean to different areas. So some place it up a little bit higher, some place it a little bit lower, some do it up super, super tight. And some of them even like leave maybe like a finger, you could put your finger in the belt so that it's a little bit loose. So the idea is that you breathe into the belt and you expand and you push into the belt. So there's different preferences, but the main concept is that we're trying to increase intra-abdominal pressure so that when we go, we have something to push against so that we can lift. Weightlifting belt. And then again, yes, if you are lifting probably less than your body weight, it's probably not something that you want to put high on the priority list. But if you're in a position like Coach Nick, who's lifting 2.5 times their body weight, it's probably something that you want to start learning how to use.
I don't have one. I'm so raw. I'm raw AF, but I need one.
Well, I think if you learned how to use the weightlifting belt again, you might be pushing that 3 times body weight, I reckon.
Yeah, well, I think it was Ian said that he reckoned I had 160 in me just in that lift. So I reckon I do too. So let's try and get this 180 then, hey?
The 180, the 4 plates, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, well, we could talk about that off air. But, yeah, I should just invest in a belt. I think that's a very good idea. You've convinced me.
Convince you. No good. All right.
Yeah, if anyone wants to send me a belt, I'll use it.
Well, my favorite belt that I use at the moment, I've used it for a long time, is it's got a lever. It's called a lever belt. So you it's a really thick belt. You wrap it around, you put the prongs into the holes, and you pull the lever. And of course, once you do your set, you get to flick off the lever and it goes.
Yeah, like that's this, and you very feel like glamorous. A badass. Yeah. I've seen you doing that. And yeah, that's a pretty cool move. So I need to start doing that too.
The flick, yeah. So there's, of course, like there's prong belts. So they're similar to like belts that you might wear in, like, I don't know, dress pants, those types of things. And then there's also like Velcro belts, which are a little bit softer, a little bit better for more like bodybuilding style training, to use that type of belt. But in kind of powerlifting, they're often going into more rigid, thick belts, a lot more uncomfortable to wear those powerlifting belts.
Wow. Okay. That's something I've got to do for sure. That was good. Thank you.
All right, Nick. Well, let's go through a speed run of some questions that have come up on our social medias and on the forum this week. So the first one, you can answer this one. The question was about choosing programs, and I think they were new to the challenge, and they asked, should I aim for fat loss, then building muscle, or vice versa? So would you like to answer this one?
Yeah, sure. Look, it's a hard one, because the fact is, like, a lot of people want to do both, but it really actually depends on what your goal is and also where you're starting with your body fat percentage. You don't have to know exactly, but it's a good idea to get, well, really, it depends where you are with your body fat, but to do a round or two of actually just getting leaner before you build muscle. But then on the other hand, if you're reasonably lean already and you're just unsure and you're sort of, I guess we could say sort of that thin fat, skinny fat sort of thing, not fat, but, you've got weight to lose, but everyone says, oh, no, you look thin in clothes and things like that. Well, building muscle can actually be an excellent, excellent way. Well, it not can, is an excellent way to then drop body fat, because your metabolism needs to work harder to maintain that muscle. So you'll be in a really good spot. So I would say have a look at your body. Check out also in our new challenge, you've got the different body types. Have a look where you sit and just determine, if your body fat is lean enough, you could probably go straight into building muscle. Otherwise, do a round of just a little bit of a shred, and I feel like that's going to set you up in a good way. But also psychologically, if you've never done this before and you jump straight into building muscle, well, even though, of course, muscle doesn't make you bulky or anything like that, if you're holding a lot of fat and you build muscle underneath, you're going to feel sort of not necessarily like you think that you want to feel. And then you're going to blame building muscle, but it could just be that you need to lean down a little and then build from there. So that would be my advice.
I like that. I think I'd agree too. Like, for most of us, if we're, brand new to fitness, brand new to the whole process of it all, you may benefit from going down that weight loss path. And I might offend some people. Like, I would say that weight loss is somewhat easier than building muscle. Like, building muscle takes a lot of hard physical work to get that change. So you may benefit from beginning, going through maybe a weight loss phase where we're focusing on our overall fitness through some cardio elements, some strength training work, we're building a little bit of muscle, we're losing a little bit of weight, great, happy days. Then as you kind of mature into your fitness career, that's when you may choose to kind of go through a muscle building phase. So that's a common path that most people will take, yeah.
That's good, yeah. The thing is, because you will get body recomposition inevitably, especially if you've never lifted weights before and you start, even if you start with a program that's designed to lean you down, you will actually start to build some muscle when you start lifting weights anyway, and you'll get that recomposition where you do lose some body fat, build a little bit of muscle. So I would start with that and then go into that absolute specific muscle building when you sort of, it's almost like the lifting belt that you were talking about before. You almost got to earn it, because it's a big responsibility once you're there, because you don't want to go into the town of muscle building and then quickly leave it. You want to stay there for a while. So you've got to be comfortable in that town.
I like it. It's a good analogy. So the next question here was based off of a post where some challengers were talking about what meal they wanted to have when the challenge was over. They were talking about the idea of a cheat meal and what kind of food that they were looking forward to at the end of the challenge. So I thought I'd just answer a similar question, which is, you know, should I have a cheat meal after the challenge? Now, I think when we go through a restrictive diet process where we say, you know, these foods I am allowed to have, these foods I'm not allowed to have. So maybe you've got your own list. I'm allowed to have, you know, boiled chicken. I'm allowed to have some white rice. I'm allowed to have some broccoli. You know, that's your list and that's all you're allowed to eat. And then most of us will have a range of foods that we don't have. Maybe you choose not to have burgers, pizza, alcohol. Maybe you choose not to have the cheese platter on the weekends and the bowl of ice cream at dinner. Okay, we all have our list of things that we choose not to have. Now, once we go through this diet process, at the end of the challenge, we are often craving these foods that we're not allowed to have. And what can happen is what's called a disinhibition reflex. So you've inhibited your kind of desire to have these foods. And what happens is as soon as you allow yourself to have one little bit of food, there's a high chance that you go through a disinhibition reflex where you kind of have all the foods, okay? Which can be problematic because when we go through a big dieting phase, that's when we're at the highest risk of weight regain. So the leaner we become, the faster we can gain weight. Okay. And this is kind of like a real survival instinct. Imagine if, you know, Nick, you and I were stuck in the jungle for, you know, a whole year and we lose all our body fat and we're just skin and bone. As soon as we, you know, find an avocado tree out in the Amazon and we eat that, you know, we're going to gain body fat really quickly because our body goes, well, yeah, I need to, you know, get something because we're going to starve if we don't. So it's a real, like, you know, survival defensive mechanism. So when we do go into a really lean stage, so, you know, guys, if we get down to 6%, girls, if we get down to that 12% mark, you know, we're at a high chance of lots of regain rapidly. So my advice, or should I have a cheat meal versus what my advice is? My advice is that we go through kind of a reverse dieting process where we slowly increase our calories back to a concept of maintenance. Okay, that would be the wise path to take. Should you have a cheat meal? Well, look, the thing I would say is that we're all human. We all want to have things like chocolate, ice cream, you know, whatever your kryptonite is. Like for me, like things like yogurt and dip, almost anything in paste form, I just can't have around me because I just like consume it so quickly. So I know what my kind of kryptonite is, but I also really enjoy those foods. So either I can go through a really restrictive process and then keep staring at that dip aisle being like, oh man, that hummus looks so good. Or I could have a small amount so that next time I go down that dip aisle, it's like, oh yeah, I'll have a little bit of hummus in like, you know, a month. But I won't, you know, go wild versus, oh, I'll have hummus next year. And as soon as I have a tub of that kilo hummus, right? You've seen those big ones in Coles and Woolies. As soon as I have that tub, you know, I'm eating it with my hands. No, that doesn't happen anymore. Because I know how to, you know, manage my own cravings for food. So answer this question, should I have one? You know, you probably don't want to have one because there's a high chance of weight regain. You probably want to go through a reverse dieting process where we're slowly increasing our calories. And it would be kind of a okay idea to, you know, have a small amounts of that food that you're craving so that you kind of satisfy that urge so that you can go back into a dieting process.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think you don't realize how sensitive your body is until you've done it a few times when you've leaned right down. And then, yeah, the only time you can learn is by going through it and you go, oh gosh, I should have followed the reverse diet properly. So definitely just don't go crazy because it's supposed to, this is a lifestyle. So it's not really, you're not meant to be feeling super deprived necessarily. You might feel a little bit hungry, but just have a think about what it is that you actually want to eat, because it may just even be more, a bigger quantity of the foods that you're currently eating. You might just feel a little bit hungry. So those healthy foods, you know, more of the veggies, more of the, a bigger serving of meat or something like that, rather than going for traditionally that junky type food that we see as a treat.
Yeah. You know, just a couple more points. Like the first one I would make is that another little anecdote. When I competed in my bodybuilding show, what I really wanted after my show was a pizza. Okay. So what ended up happening was I had pizza, a second pizza, and a bowl of ice cream. Okay. So you can see where this story is going.
Totally. Yeah.
I felt like absolute dog crap after I did that. So I had such a big urge that I overindulged. And because I had gone through such, you know, basic foods, like I was only eating, you know, like quote, quote, rabbit foods, my body was like fine tuned to nothing. And then I introduced all these other foods that it wasn't ready for. And oh gosh, I felt like absolute crap. So that's the first thing that we need to appreciate, that if you've gone through a really strict dieting process where you've only really been having like, you know, maybe like your chicken and veg and maybe a little bit of rice and really, you know, simple basic foods, if you introduce lots of these really rich hearty foods, your body may reject that slightly.
Okay.
That's the first thing I'll say.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is that if you are craving foods and you want to reward yourself with food, it may be worth reflecting on why you want to reward yourself with food. And is that the reason why you may have started the challenge in the position that you were in, where you were looking for food as a reward for that like psychological kind of like kickback, that endorphins that come from food, rather than looking at food as an energy source? Okay. So if you are continually fueling that concept of, oh yeah, I need to have chocolate because it makes me feel, you know, good, it makes me happy, that might be a poor train of thought moving forward. Because if you've had a hard day and you constantly reach for the ice cream, the chocolate, if you feel stressed and you're grabbing those bags of chips, if you feel tired, you grab the Mars bar, like, you know, these might be poor habits to have long-term, because that weight's just going to keep creeping back in.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's the thing to really explore, because as soon as you can explore that and let that go and find new reward systems, you're almost free. It's like a big sense of freedom. So keep exploring that. That might be, you might have conquered your weight training, your routines, everything, and that's all in place, but perhaps you know, those little triggers and things need to be now worked on. So that's something you could work on in the next challenge, just the idea of not having necessarily food as a reward.
Look, Nick, next question here is about abdominal separation. And a question comes up quite frequently on our Facebook group or our socials, but in this case it was our Facebook group. And the question was, can you complete the challenge with abdominal separation? And I'm assuming that this person recently gave birth or recently was pregnant, or they knew someone who was recently gave birth or pregnant. So Nick, would you like to answer this one here? Can you complete the challenge with abdominal separation?
Okay, so it's really important for me to just say, we don't know your individual circumstances. So with that sort of thing, it's really important to see a registered allied healthcare professional, like say a women's health physio, just to get assessed and get a plan to get you back in action to be optimal. The reason is because the different weights and things that you'll be lifting will require full usage of your body. So we don't want you to be compromised in any way. And also things like that, if they're not rectified from the start, it can actually then lead on to say a weak pelvic floor, things like that, where you feel like you're going to wee all the time when you've given birth. So I would say, I bet you can, but you probably need a few different exercises that you can do alongside of other things, and perhaps a little bit of modifications to the program. So it's really first best to go and see that healthcare professional, because also there are a lot of really knowledgeable women's health physios these days that will get right onto that. Because even when I had the kids way back, even when I did, maybe like, you know, 13 years ago, it wasn't as well addressed. So you're a little bit on your own with that sort of thing. And if you found, say, a good instructor at the gym, I found a good one who, she actually did assessments for us and things. Now that that wasn't an allied healthcare professional, so that obviously isn't something that I recommend, but at least it made me aware of, then I had to go and seek that help. And that was really good, because I certainly wouldn't be able to lift what I can lift now if I didn't address that. So it's best to address it straight away.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, you do need to go and see somebody. And look, like, Nick and I are always there to help. But I think in this instance, it's similar to, you know, a simple injury. You could go on Dr. Google and look for exercises to do for abdominal separation, or exercises to do, you know, with a sore back, a sore hip, a post ACL reconstruction, whatever it is. You could look for those exercises. However, the value in somebody there with you is being able to kind of show you how to do those exercises. So let's say abdominal separation exercises, sure, you need to be going through maybe like some transverse abdominis activation things or TA activation. Maybe you want to do some toe taps or some leg extensions, or maybe you want to start doing some low level like sit-ups and such to start strengthening through the core. But there's a really high chance that you're not utilizing those muscles and you're using your hip flexors, your neck, your back, something like that, where you may benefit from someone there watching you and kind of like poking you, being like, you know, here, and guiding you through that process.
Correct. Now, and also, yeah, there's the different degrees of abdominal separation as well. So the different, you know, the fingers and things. So we wouldn't know how far gone it is because, there are different procedures for different protocols for different levels.
And it gets tricky because some people who have abdominal separation are totally fine with zero intervention. As in, if I was a woman and I was pregnant and I had abdominal separation, I might, you know, just slowly go to the gym on my own and do some weights training. And then it's totally fine in, you know, a couple of months and happy days with no physio or anybody else intervening in that process. So it gets tricky because some people might be 100% totally fine, no issues jumping on the challenge, and the abdominal separation might come together on its own. However, you will highly, 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 highly benefit from visiting someone like a women's health physio or someone who is, well-versed in abdominal separation management so that they can guide you in the right direction.
Yeah, like definitely. I think also if you're asking that question, you probably know that you need a little bit of extra help with it. So, you know, say maybe someone else hasn't even thought about it. So it could be that it's not necessarily something that they need to worry about. But if you're asking, there's a good chance that you do need just some expert advice.
No, that's true. All right. Last question here, probably one of our most common questions that we see in the challenge is, what supplements do you recommend for the challenge?
Yep.
So the challenge brought to you by Max and Maxine is brought to you by a supplements company, Max for the guys, Maxine's for the girls. And of course, we suggest a range of different supplements that will help you in your body transformation journey. Now, we do get that question all the time where people are a little bit skeptical of supplements, and that's fair. Like, you know, the supplement market or the supplement industry has lots of, you know, pseudoscience and funky things going on around it. So I understand a lot of skepticism that comes with supplements. But what I will say is that, you know, Nick and I are here to give you the best advice possible. And we won't tell you to take anything that you don't need to take. And that's similar within the Max and Maxine company. Like, we aren't pushing any product that isn't evidence-based or is, you know, any like wacky tobacco out there. No. Like, we want to give you the best quality product. And I can vouch for the Max and Maxine range because where the product is made is literally downstairs from my office.
Yeah, we see it all the time.
So I chat to the people that make the formulas. I have somewhat of an input about what ingredients go into there. And, you know, I chat with the people who are in the blending rooms and such, and we get to try all the new flavors and stuff. Like, we are heavily involved in that process. So I can guarantee that, you know, there's no wacky jabacky or no pseudoscience that goes into our products. I can't speak on other products. I'm sure there are some great products out there. However, I also know that there are some, you know, unethical things that happen in that space. So to answer this question, what supplements do you recommend for the challenge? I'm going to give you my top three supplements because, you know, in a diverse world of supplementation, let's say if I said to you, well, what vitamin are you going to take? You might scratch your head being like, I don't know the vitamins. You might just take like a multivitamin, right? Similar with supplements. There's lots of different types of supplements. So I'm going to give you like my top three things to start with that most people will benefit from. Then from there, you might choose to add or remove other fun ingredients to test the effects on your body. Okay. So the first one, probably the most common supplement that we recommend, is a protein supplement. So for the average Westerner, we have a very low protein intake. You know, think of like your really classic, typical Australian diet. You might have Weet-Bix for breakfast, which is advertised as high protein, but it might only be like 5 or 10 grams of protein. Then for lunch, you might have like, I don't know, a peanut butter sandwich, or maybe go fancy and go get a Subway or something like that. You have a little bit of meat in there. That might have another like 30 grams of protein in there. Then for dinner, you might have, I don't know, like a spag bowl or something like that. And that might have like another 30 grams of protein in there. So for your day, you might be having, you know, 70, 80 grams of protein, right? Now, the Australian dietary guidelines suggest that we want about 0.8 grams of protein per kilo of body weight. And that's the Australian dietary guidelines for an average Australian who, you know, wakes up, goes to work, comes home, happy days, wipe their hands. We aren't really average Australians. We're trying to build some muscle. We're trying to push ourselves like an athlete to get fitter, get stronger, get healthier. So our recommendations are a little bit higher, which is more in line with the International Society of Sports Nutrition, which is closer to about 2 grams per kilo of body weight. Okay. So the Australian guidelines, think of them as like 1 gram per kilo of body weight. The ISSN, closer to 2 grams per kilo of body weight. And there's even some evidence that kind of pushes up to like that 3 grams per kilo of body weight. So if you were like a, you know, 80, 90 kilo male who doesn't go to the gym and you have your wheat beaks for breakfast, you go to Subway for lunch and have spag bol for dinner and you did that every day, sure, you probably have, you know, just the minimum amount of protein to be able to go to work and come home happy days. But if you're trying to build muscle, if you're trying to get stronger, get healthier, you probably need a little bit more protein than that. So you probably benefit from supplementing with some protein powder because, yeah, sure, you can have a bit of, you know, chicken, but then that also comes with other macronutrients, like a little bit of fats in there as well. So you're going to be having a lot more calories to get the same amount of protein as you would to have a protein powder where you can just mix it with water, drink it, and then you're not having any other additional calories. On top of that, there's that huge convenience element. Like for me, like after I train, like I just want to have a drink and consume that protein rather than trying to sit there and have a chicken, right? So there's that huge convenience element. And then you could take that anywhere you go. So you can have the powder mixed with water and go to the gym or go to work or whatever else you're doing. Remember, I would just say that protein powder isn't really like a crazy drug or anything. It's just dehydrated milk. So
break it down. Exactly.
Simply it's a food. It's a food that's milk, that's dehydrated, filtered to take away all the carbs and fats that are in milk, take out some of the lactose and bits and pieces that are in milk and make it into a powdered form. So it's not some, you know, wacky tobacco that's out there. It really is just dehydrated milk. It's a food product and it's aimed to help us to have more protein throughout the day. So that'll be number one, is to have a protein powder, and we want to be having that you know, around our workout. So have that on training days, either before or after you train. And then for some of us, we may choose to have like a nighttime protein to help us as well. But if you needed to choose, I would say just starting off with a standard protein powder, such as our Maxine Burn or the, you know, Max's Super Shred or something like that. And then you can introduce some maybe nighttime protein as you get a little bit more experience with protein powders. Number two on my list will be creatine. Creatine is probably the number one most researched ergogenic aid, meaning sports performance improvement product. So creatine, it helps with the Krebs cycle, or if you remember, maybe you did it in biology class in high school, or ATP. So it helps with that ATP cycle, and it basically gives you more energy. So that includes me talking right now. That includes me using my hands, getting animated. Improves our brain function because that requires energy. So it basically helps our body to create energy for movement. So creatine, going through a loading phase, can help us, you know, day to day. It helps us in lifting. It helps us in cardio training. It helps us in endurance events. So that would be the next most important supplement that we want to take is a creatine. For me, I actually put creatine as number one in priority and protein as number two. But for most of us, starting off with protein first, and then adding the creatine will be really helpful for us. Then number three would be a source of caffeine. So caffeine, yeah, it's a supplement. Most of us supplement caffeine a lot. It's probably the most commonly used drug in the world. And caffeine helps us very acutely in a training scenario. So when you're training, you could choose to have a simple black coffee, right? We don't want to be adding too many milks and such to our coffee because it's going to add more calories and it kind of slows down the absorption of caffeine. So we do want to kind of have it black if we're having coffee. Or we can choose to have something like a pre-workout. I love a good pre-workout because it has lots of other compounds in there that help us with, you know, managing our lactic acid or helping us with, you know, nitric oxide boosters, meaning that we get more blood flow around our body. So something like a pre-workout before you train can be a really great way to improve your overall performance in the gym, which chronically leads to more muscle growth and more physical adaptations, which is great for the body. So in a super summary, where should you start with supplementation? Number one, start with protein. Number two, add a creatine. Number three, look at your caffeine before you train. That's 1, 2, 3. From there, you can trial and test other supplements. And if you're wondering if you should have one, if you should add this, if you should add that, my advice is to try it. So if you're curious and you want to try a glutamine, or you want to try an ACLAR, or if you want to try CLA or whatever it is, I would suggest that you test it, trial it, monitor the effects on your body. If you see a change, great. If you don't, that's okay. You crossed off that curiosity in your mind. Okay.
And give it time as well. Give it time. You can't sort of try it for 2 days and go, I don't see a change. Although creatine's pretty quick, like I must say, that's pretty awesome. But yeah, for the other ones, just give them a little bit of time. If you want to experiment, invest in, you know, the full cycle of whatever the actual container says, and then you can say if it worked or it didn't. And also really make sure that you're on top of your diet with it all, because none of it will work
if that's you're not right.
taking yeah. care of your diet.
Yeah, it's like if you were having a really piss poor diet and you chose to have like a multivitamin on top of it. It's like, well, okay, sure, that's better than nothing, but you know, you could probably get the bulk of your vitamins and minerals from just eating good quality foods. So that's one thing that we can't forget, is that supplementation really does add those extra 1 or 2% on top of a good balanced diet. We do need to appreciate that. However, you know, it's like building a house, right? You know, you could build a house with a saw and a hammer, but power tools make it so much easier. And that's the same as with our body transformations. Sure, you can transform your body really well with just having whole foods, but it's so much easier with supplements. And if you are going down that whole foods path, or you know, you're going to build a house with a hammer and a saw, like, gosh, it's going to take a lot of work, and you're going to need a lot of experience, a lot of guidance to be able to do that. Or you can just use some power tools and make it a lot easier.
Yeah, I don't know what I'd do without protein powder and creatine, and actually caffeine, to be honest. So those three, they resonate heavily with me.
Well, look, Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 29 of the Challenge Weekly Show.
Wow, 29 hours together. Woohoo!
29 hours together.
That means 30 next week. Yay!
30s next week.
That's right.
Look, if you've liked this episode, let us know. You can leave us a review on iTunes. You give us a little thumbs up and whatever, wherever you're listening to this one. Or you can share it on your Instagram or on Facebook. We love seeing those of you who are out there listening to us. And we will catch you next week for episode number 30 of the Challenge Weekly Show.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.